This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The Supreme Court has gone home for the summer, we think. This very significant term for the court of Chief Justice John Roberts has ended its term with two decisions, both of which seem to fully acknowledge an historic transformation in America's acceptance of homosexuality and an ongoing evolution in the definition of marriage. In a 5-4 decision, the justices have struck down the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, quote, DOMA is unconstitutional as a deprivation of the equal liberty of persons that is protected by the Fifth Amendment. The federal government has no cause to defend heterosexual marriage, the court held, and there is no demonstrable harm to citizens if people are allowed to marry whomever they wish. Now, in a second case, the court could have declared any state law banning same-sex marriage equally unconstitutional, but it did not. This was the case of California's Proposition 8. Here, the court nullified the Prop 8 ban, but on procedural grounds, tossing it back to the district court, which ruled it unconstitutional quite a while ago. What does this all mean? Catherine Franke joins us, law professor and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School. Welcome.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on the show.
It seems as though these decisions were easy for the court to come to. The DOMA was an overreach by the federal government, according to Anthony Kennedy. The procedural case is a little curious on the Prop 8 question. What does this decision say about the court's divisions and what this says for cases going forward?
Well, we had a suspicion from the argument, the oral arguments in the DOMA case, that it was the conservative members of the court who wanted to take the DOMA case and not the more liberal members of the court, so that they could say once and for all that there was no constitutional issue here before the issue of same-sex marriage became more widely accepted in society. In some sense, I think people were thinking that the court wanted to nip this in the bud before it got any worse, that the conservative members of the court did. But that's not what happened. We actually have Justice Kennedy writing for the court and stating a very broad and expansive notion of equality for same-sex couples and denouncing bigotry and animus against people on the basis of their sexual orientation.
Although it's interesting, in the same way, by using that broad language, Kennedy, if that was his intent, seems to be nipping in the bud any other cases. The court doesn't want to have much to do with this same-sex marriage issue going forward based on at least this first decision.
Well, I think the court felt, and who knows what they really felt, but some of us have surmised that the court would rather not have had both of these cases so soon. The Supreme Court doesn't like to be out ahead of the political process and out ahead of the American people more generally. They like to see these new difficult social issues percolate for a while before they come to the Supreme Court. And in some ways, there are a number of us in the lesbian and gay community who felt that Ted Olson and David Boies, by pushing the Prop 8 case, the California case, so aggressively that it pushed the court to take both the Prop 8 and the DOMA case before the court really felt that these cases were ripe and ready.
Does that mean, then, that bans that might exist in other states are challengeable? And, you know, there was an anomaly in California. The state chose not to defend the Prop 8 law, so that created the procedural door that the court drove through here. Does that mean that some of these other bans will be challenged and that this case will come up again?
Well, the other bans would have been challenged no matter how the cases came out today. What we really have is a 50-state strategy going from the most progressive to the less progressive states, trying to raise the question of a right to marriage state by state based on local norms and traditions and where the people in each state are in thinking about evolving notions of equality. And in fact, that's where Justice Kennedy started in the Windsor case and the DOMA case. He said the people of New York have been chewing on this issue for a while, and they have an evolving understanding of the meaning of equality that was concretized in the change in our law allowing same-sex couples to marry about 2 years ago.
So what's your assessment? Is this a Brown versus Board of Ed moment that really begins something, or is this an acknowledgement of something that's been going on for a while in American society?
I guess I'd have to say yes, it's both. And your reference to Brown actually raises one of the more troubling aspects of, I think, the end of this Supreme Court's term, because what we see is the court at the same time putting to rest, I think forever, the idea that animus or disfavor for gay people is an acceptable and a legitimate reason for local, state, or the federal government to legislate. Right, that we can no longer enact laws that discriminate against gay people and pass constitutional muster. The court sees that as a problem, and I don't think we'll ever have to raise that question in the court again. But this happens at the exact same moment that the court doesn't seem to be able to see racism in our society any longer. It's as if they only have the ability to see one form of injustice at the same time. So many of us were hugely disappointed by what the court did in the Voting Rights Act case yesterday, what they did in some of the employment discrimination cases last week, and what may be the outcome of the affirmative action cases, the Fisher case. We don't know exactly how that will pan out. But the language of the Supreme Court in those race cases, in effect, said constitutionally important questions of racism are no longer as pressing as they used to be. But we're able to see constitutionally pressing issues of sexual orientation-based discrimination in a new way. And that disheartens me a great deal, that the court can't see both of those forms of social injustice at the same time.
Catherine Franke is a law professor and director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at the Columbia Law School. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Some personal reaction now from Sarah Gogan, a 24-year-old in San Francisco. Welcome, Sarah. So one of the more emotional pieces of the reaction on the steps of the court today were couples talking about how this would affect their children, the children that they've brought up during this period of time when they felt unequal to other families, other couples, and that this would have a real impact on them. You're one of those children.
Yes, I am. I am definitely the proud daughter of two fabulous gay dads who are actually over on the East Coast right now doing a couple interviews. So hello over to the East Coast.
Well, I've heard of the East Coast. That's where we're speaking to you from. So let's talk a little bit about that sense of being unequal. Did your parents have this feeling of being unequal when they adopted you? As you grew up, did you get a sense that your family was not like others in the eyes of the law?
Yes, definitely. I think for my dads, they were only the second successful open gay adoption in the state of California. So for them, they were sort of the trailblazers at the forefront. They got a lot of the heat, not only from their families and friends, but from the community and definitely from the government, you know, and their country as well. So when they were trying to adopt, it was a difficult time, and they experienced the injustice, even living in San Francisco in a place that you know, is so recognized for not only its gay community, but also just for being kind of a, you know, an open city. We still do experience homophobia here and injustice here. So I think for us growing up, it wasn't so much of an issue of me being like, oh, I'm so different than everybody else, because I grew up just like all of the other kids in my class. You know, I went to school, my dad's coached my sports teams, you know, we did prom, we do shopping. We do everything that every other family in the country seems to do. We were just treated differently in the eyes of the law. So today is sort of that marking moment of all the things that my dads have gone through together as a couple and everything that we've gone through as a family, that it's sort of kind of come down to this moment, and it's exciting, it's nerve-wracking, but it's a great step towards, you know, full equality in the future.
Sarah, how does it feel not to have to be a trailblazer anymore? I can imagine that there must have been a lot of pressure on you that, boy, this adoption has to work out or else a whole lot goes down the tubes here.
Yes, I think, and not just for me, I know a lot of kids in my generation whose parents were sort of, you know, like you said, trailblazers at the forefront. It's kind of a relief to be able to pass down the torch, you know, to the next generation and be like, now it's your turn to teach others that your family is just the same. And it's a sense of relief and a sense of everything that we have done, you know, is it worked, and everything that we've done is worth it.
And you can suddenly be free, I mean, from your perspective, to fight with your dads without worrying that someone's going to give it some moral overtone here.
Yes. Yes, I think in the past we tried not to sort of not to sort of let that kind of stuff bring us down as a family and sort of use that to kind of empower us and to help us be stronger individuals. So I think today is just, again, a day of celebration.
And you're 24, right?
Yes, I am.
And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, you've gone from trailblazer to this, I think, with these two decisions, I mean, is rapidly becoming no big deal, except in maybe certain pockets of the country. I mean, in your lifetime, you've seen this transformation.
Yes, yes. I mean, growing up, even in San Francisco, I went to Catholic grammar school and Catholic high school. And so for me and my dad, we were the only ones, you know, the only sort of quote-unquote different family in that respect. And so today is just, it's a day to kind of remember what we had gone through and just sort of move forward.
Do you remember the Defense of Marriage Act being passed, the debates over it, you know, what happened back in the 90s?
No, you know, my parents tried to keep me sort of out of that, out of a lot of what was going on when that was being ruled. I think for them, they didn't want me to see the negative effects that can come out of, such a big decision, a big ruling.
President Clinton signed that.
I know.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
It is, and to see how opinions and you know, emotions can change in such a short period of time, even from somebody who signs something to now changing their opinion, changing their decision.
They shielded you from a lot.
They did. They did.
I mean, that would have been the president basically saying your family is illegitimate.
I think they had a feeling that I might have a little temper when I was a little younger and not really sure how to handle it. Maybe at the time I wasn't able to fully understand everything that was going on. And I think they wanted to let me know that, you know, they were okay and not to worry about them, that we were still a family and not government, not anybody else would be able to tear that apart.
Well, you did it.
Yes, they did it.
You guys all together did it.
Yes.
You feel a burden lifted? You feel a little light on your feet today?
I do. I do. It was an exciting commute to work. I take public transportation, so everybody on the bus was on their phones, checking everything. So it's a lot of excitement going on in the city and a lot of excitement in our family as well.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Congratulations. And say hey to your dads for us.
Will do. Thank
Sarah you. Gogan's father's adopted her in 1988. She's one of the first gay adoptions in California. She's now 24 years old. We want to hear from you about the Supreme Court's decisions. President Obama released this statement. We are a people who declared that we are all created equal and the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Republican Senator John Cornyn said this, though, the issue is not going away and there are going to be havens of traditional values like Texas where I don't think the law is going to be changed. More on the politics of same-sex marriage later this hour. Your reaction on these cases, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway. Coming up, the leaker who inspired Edward Snowden. Stay with us. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Back to Washington now, where they are still celebrating the end of the Supreme Court term. The Defense of Marriage Act declared unconstitutional and California's Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage nullified on procedural grounds. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Todd Zwillick. Todd, welcome.
Hi, John.
A lot of people present for the announcement of the decision and a lot of people on Capitol Hill weighing in one way or the other.
Completely packed in front of the court, as you might expect, because everybody finally knew that these long-awaited decisions were coming out today. There was a big crowd, John. I would have a hard time estimating how big it is, but it's in the hundreds. News media flags and demonstration signs, as you can imagine. A lot of happy people, most of the people outside the court, looking forward to the repeal or at least the striking down of the Defense of Marriage Act and the Prop 8 decision. Here's Michael Knoppen. He lives in Washington, D.C., but he's been married to his husband, John Becker, since 2006.
We were married in Toronto. We had to leave the country. Now we wouldn't have to leave the country. Sorry.
A lot of emotion there, and there was talk not only about spouses who can get married now or don't have to worry about their unions now, also the children that are affected by all this.
Yeah, that's right. Children, particularly children of federal employees or anybody who interacts with the federal government. And indeed, that was part of the majority decision that came from the court, pointing out that the children of married couples under federal law are in a position before this decision to know that their parents' marriage was inferior and seen as inferior by the state. The concurring justices, the majority opinion, saying that by itself, in addition to other factors, were a violation of the Fifth Amendment, John.
We've seen across the country a wave of political movements that are endorsing same-sex marriage, with some exceptions. But it's remarkable how much this decision meant as a real milestone for the people who were there on the steps of the court today.
Well, it did. And the Defense of Marriage Act is fairly narrow. And indeed, the Prop 8 decision is fairly narrow. It changes things in California, but doesn't apply to any other state. And everybody knows that. It does not legalize gay marriage across the country. But there was a feeling out in front of the court, and there is one here in Congress as well, John, that the decision legitimizes for the first time gay marriage on a national level and solidifies the feeling among supporters that the die is cast, that it is just a matter of time before the entire country accepts it. Now, according to the ruling, as we know, it does not mean that every single state has to legalize gay marriage. The court didn't speak to that. And indeed, I want to let you in on a statement from Speaker John Boehner. His statement here is important because it was the House Republicans. It was the bipartisan legal action group that was the party to this case. It was John Boehner and the Republicans that were arguing to uphold the DOMA statute when the Obama administration refused to do so. And Speaker Boehner says that there's going to be a robust national debate over gay marriage that will continue in the public square. And he says, quote, "It is my hope that states will define marriage as the union between one man and one woman," end quote.
Is there any political momentum for doing that on Capitol Hill right now, or does this settle the matter, do you think?
Well, it's unclear what other avenues Capitol Hill has. Of course, marriage policy is made in the states. It was the Defense of Marriage Act that was the federal government's sort of crack at delegitimizing gay marriage way back in the 90s when President Clinton signed it. So defining marriage for the states is really something that Congress doesn't have the purview to do. They're unlikely to try to get it. But in terms of federal tax filings, John, this year, in this tax year, people who are married in states where gay marriage is legal can now file jointly for the first time.
And consider the arc of history. President Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act back in the 90s. President Obama is calling the plaintiffs today on the phone outside of the court to congratulate them. So it's a very different time.
And calling them live on television as well. The cameras caught it. It was a big moment for the proponents of gay marriage, John.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.